and you cannot tell.
No, the state of the Pentagon.
You cannot tell.
State of the country is strong, and it you know, it sounds jive to say it, but I don't think you can be anywhere. And not feel good to be an American today.
I'm so glad that we can be here representing Washington and the Pentagon. And we want to thank everybody at the Pentagon that allowed us and all of the other stations to come down here and do this today. It's a day for everybody to get together.
We're going to be here for a couple more hours and hopefully have the chance to chat with some more of the individuals that were affected that day and that were heroes that day.
Mike,
it's delightful to talk to them.
I really have to go.
Yeah, I think this might be time for a little bathroom break.
Let's go to Buzz. Buzz.
Hi, Don and Mike. Thank you. Police in Columbus, Ohio say a man they have in custody had told a worker in a state office building that he was there to install a bomb. The office building was evacuated after two dogs detected the scent of explosives in a van that was parked outside. No explosives have been found yet. Police say the scent was picked up three times by one dog and once by another. They say the man who's in custody made the comment about the bomb after a worker had asked him what he was doing. The employee had thought the man looked out of place. Authorities have not yet said who the man is. About 4,000 state workers do work in that building. It houses the Ohio Supreme Court, as well as the Attorney General's office and other state agencies. America is on watch today. An American Airlines jet has returned to the Houston airport, but a source tells the Associated Press there was no hijacking attempt after all. Initially, authorities said they were looking into that possibility. Earlier, reports said that F-16s had escorted the plane back to the airport, but the news source says that's not the case. The flight took off for Dallas this afternoon and returned to Houston about a half hour later, so it did do that. 50 passengers were on board. An airline spokesman says the captain took the plane back to Houston because of a potential security incident. He says two air marshals were on board, and the passenger involved has been taken off the plane. No details yet on what the disturbance was. Americans today have been remembering and mourning and looking ahead. At Ground Zero in New York, the names of all 2,801 World Trade Center victims were read aloud. Thousands gathered this morning where the towers once stood. In and around the crater, they stood with tears, flowers, and American flags fluttering in the wind. Many held up pictures of loved ones lost in the rubble. And at the Pentagon, the source of the music you're hearing now, President Bush vowed that the victims of 9/11 did not die in vain.
Within minutes, brave men and women were rescuing their comrades. Within hours, in this building, the planning began for a military response. Within weeks, commands went forth from this place that would clear terrorist camps and caves and liberate a nation. And within 1 year, this great building has been made whole once again.
Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld told the thousands gathered outside the rebuilt section of the damaged building that the terrorists wanted it to be a day when innocents died. Instead, he says, it was a day when heroes were born. Members of Congress today remembered the victims of last year's attacks in a building many believe was spared only because of the bravery of passengers on Flight 93. There were moments of silence on the floors of both the House and Senate to remember those who died in New York, Pennsylvania, and at the Pentagon. Lawmakers vowed to win the war against terrorism. Senate Minority Leader Trent Lott promised that until the hand of terror is crushed, the work of justice is not done. Virginia Senator John Warner said, quote, "We're grateful for the stronger nation we are today and the indomitable spirit of our citizens." New York, Washington, and a field in rural Pennsylvania are not the only gathering spots for September 11th remembrances. In Columbus, Ohio, the sprawling statehouse lawn was covered in flags. 2,999 U.S. flags and one Ohio flag were arranged to depict the Twin Towers. Scores of people came together in Phoenix, where they joined hands before sunrise and faced east. They listened on a cell phone to New Yorkers singing God Bless America. At Logan International Airport in Boston, all ground operations stopped for an observance this morning at 8:46 a.m. Eastern Time, the moment the first plane struck the World Trade Center. The two planes that sliced the Twin Towers had taken off from Logan. And gamblers in Nevada also marked the attacks at the Atlantis Casino Resort in Reno. Dealers held their cards and cocktail servers paused to reflect. Soldiers on the front lines in Afghanistan are remembering the September 11th victims. One soldier at a memorial ceremony at Kandahar Air Base says there is no other place he would want to be. He says the mission bestows a sense of productivity. Servicemen and women in Afghanistan's harsh mountains and deserts paused and stood in silence to remember their country's loss. The commander of coalition forces at Bagram Air Base led a 20-minute ceremony. He called the soldiers the heroes and heroines of today. In a mountainous province in the country's center, special force troops woke before dawn to raise the flag. One soldier sang the anthem as they saluted. Even as soldiers remembered last year's attacks, they were targeted anew. A gunman fired at a U.S. guard tower in Bagram, and rockets were fired at the airfield and coast. No Americans were hurt. And as I said a moment ago, there are remembrances around the country today. Here are a few of note provided to us by affiliates along the Don and Mike Network. Anchorage remembers a September 11th memorial event in Anchorage, Alaska. The mayor hosting a tribute to the city's military personnel, local emergency responders, and Alaska's volunteer community from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Alaska Center for the Performing Arts. There will be featured speakers, including General Schwartz. Tickets for the free event are available at the ACPA ticket office. And the United Way is asking to bring canned food for a food drive for that as well. In Las Vegas, the Metropolitan Police Department is holding a candlelight memorial service at 7 p.m. this evening at Police Memorial Park on Metro Academy Way. That'll mark the anniversary of the terrorist attacks and the response by emergency personnel, airline personnel, and citizens on that day 1 year ago. In the Richmond, Virginia area, at the First Baptist Church on Thompson Street in Ashland, Virginia, a special service tonight, as well as the Slash Christian Church on Mount Hebron Road in Hanover, Virginia at 7, and the Grove Avenue Baptist Church at Ridge and Parham Roads in Richmond, Virginia begins its service at 6:30 this evening. And in Wichita, Kansas, 9/11, a year after, a remembrance for the victims of September 11th, 2001, there'll be a reception from 5 to 9 p.m. this evening at City Arts on West Lewis. The admission is free. And I'd like to wrap up by saying that Muslims, Christians, and Jews alike are praying for solace today after last year's attacks. Religious leaders around the country are condemning the violence and preaching tolerance for Muslims. South African Archbishop Desmond Tutu led prayer today at Washington's National Cathedral. He called the attacks an outrage of unspeakable horror. Some of the people leaving New York's Episcopal Cathedral of St. John the Divine sat on the steps in tears. One woman said she needed to be someplace where there is a chance for hope. In Louisville, Kentucky, people prayed and read words of Martin Luther King and Mr. Gandhi at an all-day vigil. A Muslim leader in Los Angeles who spoke today at a service honoring victims said crime does not have a religion. A minister addressing an interfaith ceremony in San Francisco offered prayers for safety and also for those profiled and deported since September 11th. There are other events going on today we'd like to tell you about. A commemorative blood drive will be held at Battleship Memorial Park in Mobile, Alabama today until 7 p.m. at the Aircraft Pavilion, provided by the Alabama Gulf Coast Chapter of the American Red Cross. In Iowa City, Iowa, at 7 o'clock this evening, a city park musical performance and speeches appropriate for this occasion. There will be plenty of events in Philadelphia today, including an ongoing event featuring the Philadelphia Orchestra, Peter Nero and the Philly Pops, the Opera Company of Philadelphia, the Pennsylvania Ballet, the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia, the American Theater Arts for Youth, the Philadelphia Chamber Music Society, all at the Kimmel Center, Verizon Hall on South Broad Street. Tickets, again, for that event are free as well. In Baltimore, the Baltimore County Public Library, the Towson Branch on York Road, presents In Memory, a program of remembrance with readings, inspirational thoughts, and songs. That's at 7 o'clock this evening. Again, that's on Merritt Boulevard for the Towson Branch of the Baltimore County Public Library. There will be other events that we'll keep you posted on as they become available to us. In York, Pennsylvania, a remembrance will be held at St. Matthew's Lutheran Church on West Market Street in York. Mayor John Brenner speaking along with other local leaders. And the mayor led a ceremony at City Hall in San Francisco today. The mayor also requested that the traffic lights in San Francisco turn red simultaneously to coincide with the moment of silence there. And in Las Vegas, Hot Talk 1140, our affiliate there, will be teaming up with their sister Las Vegas Infinity Stations to celebrate America. The event will take place from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Thomas and Mack Center. American flags for everyone stopping by with patriotic songs from Vegas acts and a billboard for people to come by to sign to support the nation. On hand will be local police, fire, National Guard, and veterans. Repeating some information we gave earlier at the Concord, New Hampshire, hundreds are gathering for a day of caring at that capital city. The entire city of Concord, New Hampshire stopped this morning, as they did in San Francisco, to observe a moment of silence. Americans coming together to show that we are united as a country. Tonight there'll be a candlelight vigil on the steps of New Hampshire State House in Concord. And there will be events in Portland, Oregon as well. I'm Buzz Burbank, as Don and Mike broadcast live from the Pentagon on this first anniversary of the attack on America. For top aides to President Bush, September 11th brought a sudden and frightening realization that America is under attack. That's what Chief of Staff Andrew Card whispered into President Bush's ear as the president listened to youngsters reading at a school in Florida, as you may recall. And National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice says that when she heard of the second plane striking the World Trade Center, she knew at once it was a terrorist attack. Rice quickly went to the White House Situation Room and tried to contact other top aides. But then, when the Secret Service advised of a plane headed toward Washington, she went to the mansion's underground bunker. There, she found Vice President Cheney and Transportation Secretary Norman Mineta talking with air traffic controllers, trying to ground all flights throughout the country and telling the president on Air Force One that it was not safe to return to Washington. The president took a circuitous route back to the nation's capital, but eventually he demanded that he be returned here so that he could be reunited with his wife, despite the danger that was thought to still exist for the president and for the rest of the country. And now, returning you to the live broadcast of Don and Mike from the Pentagon here in Washington, D.C., I'm Buzz Burbank. I'll have more information for you later here on the Don and Mike Show.
Thank you, Buzz.
You bet.
Picking your music there. Why are we playing like cabaret music in the background of the news?
I don't know. Hey, Buzz,
the music you heard,
Joe Artinger thing?
The music you're hearing now must be coming from the control room. The music I played during the news was Amazing Grace, as it was played at the Pentagon earlier today.
Really? I heard, wouldn't you hear like light jazz in the background there?
Yeah.
It must be one of our feedbacks or something like that.
Okay, whatever.
Everybody's looking confused.
Thank you, Buzz. And it is September 11th, 2002. Don and Mike Show live at the Pentagon. And we are joined now by Don Behe and Mike. All day long we've been talking about heroes and what occurred at the Pentagon a year ago today. And Don is a hero.
Part of the emergency response team, one of the first people on the scene here at the Pentagon, and
without tooting your own horn,
you saved a state trooper 1 year ago today.
Tell us what happened, what those circumstances were like.
We were on our way down to the crash site, and basically we went into the building to look for survivors and to get people out of the building. After working our way through the crash site area and up to a stairwell, we went up various floors looking for survivors, and finally we got to the fourth floor, ran into Arlington Alley Fire that came in from center court, which shows it was quite a while, because Arlington County got there, but by the time they got to the flames, it was at least half hour, 30 minutes into the situation, and we were already up into the area. At that time, they told us we'll go on down because you don't have air bottles for breathing. So we started going downstairs, and on the third floor, Officer Middleton from Virginia State Police, who was with our group, thought he heard some people back on the third floor, so we stuck our head around the corner to yell, "Follow us out." And about that time, he inhaled a large amount of smoke from that area, and he started to collapse. I don't know how I got him downstairs and out of the building, but we got him down. I carried him out to the curbside. I am an EMT on our tactical unit, so right away I started doing medical work. I cut his shirt off, secured his weapon. I did have a Scott air pack in my truck, which I pulled out and started to use that for oxygen. In the meantime, I seen Arlington County Rescue Squad outside, and I motioned for them to come over. And they brought real regular oxygen bottle over.
You know, as you are going through this story, and you're very calm, and you're going through these details, but I know in real time it's all happening like at 78 RPM. How the hell do you keep your wits about you to think, I'm going to carry a trooper outside. Okay, I know I've got air in my car. I'm going to remove his weapon, you know, which is something you mentioned that you thought of. How do you, is it the training? Is it something instinctive that happened on September 11th?
It's primarily training. Being a trained EMT and also being a trained tactical police officer for the Pentagon Police Department, that is my job. We've been under many different situations in which we have to deal with people under stressful conditions, and unfortunately, this was a major disaster, but it wasn't my first major disaster. The first one was whenever I was growing up in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, Johnstown flood,
right,
in 1977.
When you see occasionally they talk about the play acting, the mock scenarios where they'll have the emergency response team show up for a simulated tragedy, was there anything in your training that could have possibly prepared you for what you ran into that day on September 11th a year ago?
As a matter of fact, yes.
That's a good answer.
I'm a graduate of the CONTOMS program.
What is that?
It's a program that's based out of Bethesda Naval Medical School and works in conjunction with the United States Park Police and also with the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center in Glencoe, Georgia. And it trains you to work in a tactical environment and how to deal under fire, literally, in a SWAT situation under fire. And also in adverse conditions where sight is low and you basically have to go by feel.
Don't tell you something. You're a badass. I'm looking at you right now. You are one badass. I mean that as a compliment.
You know, it is great to hear, though, that, and I guess it does, training does take over in a circumstance like this. You have to utilize what you know and go into a situation like that to use the information you have. But at a certain point, all the training in the world can't necessarily prepare you for the type of event that that happened here at the Pentagon a year ago.
You just operate on automatic.
Yeah, as we've heard that.
Yeah, but how does the automatic work? Explain it to us, to the layperson. When you get here and you know you got to go in, you got to go into the fourth floor. There's a trooper. You got to get him out. Does the thought even remotely for a nanosecond cross your mind to think, what the hell am I doing here? I gotta save my own ass and get out of here.
No, this is my job. This is what I do. And all I did was my job. And every officer here that has been held as a hero, they're the ones that have stuck to their guns and done their job. And the Pentagon should be very proud. The Pentagon Police Department, which didn't get very much credit in the press before, is actually the department that was right on scene, first on scene of this department in this accident or situation. I shouldn't say accident.
It's an act of terrorism.
Back
to war.
It was at least the first 45 minutes to an hour was sheer chaos. We are the police department here, and as the police department in this area, we responded and we did everything that we could to assist getting people out of this area and to help the people that are our citizens of the Pentagon.
You hear a lot about the guys that say, hey, you know, I reflected for a couple of weeks after the fact that we could have done more, but without the training, without the type of people you had, there would have been a much greater loss of life on that particular day.
Considerably,
right?
Much more loss.
I mean, significant numbers of people. I'm not sure exactly what the specific number of people that were taken out that day and survived, but they were significant numbers.
We actually had two major triage areas, one in center court and the other triage area off to the side of the crash area, and moved three times, moved from the grassy site that's over your shoulder to underneath the bridge going up Columbia Pike, and then from there to the other side in the grassy knoll on the other side of that, and we also had helicopters landing over there.
You guys are the police department for the Pentagon.
Yes, sir.
And we are here to give you your mad props that you were first, you guys reacted, you took care of business. Equally the military, although not first on the scene, took care of business. I'm wondering if this in some way has made you guys closer, has made the working relationship closer between the defense police department and the military who are inside.
Yes, it has, but this department also has had a long history of working with the military in different training scenarios and situations. We use various military bases around for our training for the ERT unit, Emergency Response Team. We use Quantico, we use Fort Meade, we've even used Fort Belvoir and other training sites around the
area. Well, you know, so here's where I'm coming from. We hear stuff that, you know, CIA doesn't get along with the FBI, and the FBI doesn't, you know, keeps information from so-and-so, and I'm wondering now, and I'm getting the feeling after talking to you and talking to the military guys and the other DPS guys and the Metro Police guys, that before September 11th, you all got along great. But even after September 11th, now you are a more cohesive unit where they know they can count on you. You know you can count on them. You've been through the worst of the worst together.
Much more that way, yes. The military guys here are probably really, really tight with us now. We've integrated in a lot of different training scenarios, and since we've had the MPs come here to augment DPS with various security checkpoints around the area, we've gotten a lot closer. We work together and train together. We have many different training scenarios that we run together. We had last week SRT unit, that Special Reaction Unit, which is a military tactical unit, come in from Fort Carson, Colorado, and we had worked with those guys before, but they came in to assist this department and also run a training scenario for us and for the lay officers in the department.
I want to ask you a question about any kids that might be listening out there that are, you know, and I know a lot of this happened after September 11th, where there was much more of an interest in young people out there getting involved in the military, also getting involved in police departments. For somebody that might be interested in someday participating in the police department, the Defense Protective Service, what do they have to do if they want to get involved? It's obviously
got to be a badass.
A little bit more training than an average police department. I would think you guys have to have different clearances and different. What do you do if you want to get involved with?
Right now we're having a very large hiring push. They have to do a background investigation on you. Most of us,
Joe Ardinger would be out then. I think.
I see everybody on this show's out.
Okay, just that's our local guy, Joe Ardinger, and he's out of that equation. Sorry, Joe.
Most of us that have been recruited within recent years have college background. Myself, I have a degree in criminal justice with a minor in business administration, and I'm currently working on a master's degree through Central Michigan University.
So it's an advantage to have the degree to get into your area of the police department?
Yes.
Okay.
Very much an advantage. Also, the amount of training you get afterwards, they do a background investigation, get sent to Glencoe Federal Law Enforcement Training Center down in Georgia, and you go through an incredible amount of training down there, 10 weeks of training. When you graduate Glencoe, then you come back here for a six-month in-service training with a police officer that you will ride with. He's a field training officer, and make sure that you understand the various aspects of this job. And then you're a police officer in the department.
So you say there's a hiring push right now. If somebody wanted to get involved, where would they, do you have any idea? I mean, I know you're not a recruiting officer, but where would they go for that type of information?
The best thing to go is usajobs.com, which is part of OPM's website. And they'll be able to put you in the right direction. But we're looking for quality people right now.
Right.
Educated, quality people that can pass the background investigation and can show that they have enough.
Well, this is the wrong show looking for that. I'm telling you, I know our audience, sir. And I'm telling you, you're more likely to arrest members of our audience than have members of our audience join your elite squad.
Oh, there might be one or two.
Dude, let me ask you, though, last thing. As we sit here and we look at the Pentagon, where 1 year ago all of this happened, how great is it from your standpoint to be able to sit up here on the highest perch and look at this building, pristine, beautiful again, a symbol of America at its finest. How great is it to see it finished a year later?
It actually blows my mind because right here is where I went into the building, into the crash area.
Right down where those doors are?
Right in through that area.
Right.
And this whole area was all blown out, and they had water from the fire sprinklers and broken water mains and electrical wires hanging down. Going into the scene, I was more worried about dodging electrical wires to keep from being electrocuted.
Second time I've heard that.
Right.
Don says how great it is, and it must be a good feeling. How important was it to get this building finished by today?
Very important. Shows that they didn't really hurt us.
We're America.
They didn't hurt us.
We're America.
They might have taken away some people from this planet.
Right.
But they didn't hurt us.
We'll get them.
In the long run, they didn't do a dang thing to us to make themselves look silly. They're just jealous of our system, blaming us for something that we had no push or cause of creating any problem with them. If you look at their system and trying to force their people into believing their way. That's the problem. Here in the United States, it's open. You can believe the way you want to believe, care about people the way you want to care about people, live the way you want to live, not hiding out in a cave, not forcing your women to cover their faces.
You know what I am hearing again? And in some cases, that's not a bad thing. I am hearing again, though, Mike, resolve.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hearing the underlying tone of what you're saying here. You're saying it in measured tones.
Yeah, you're
carefully speaking.
You're hearing patriotism from people that are true patriots, people that it means probably a little more to them than the average citizen out there because they live this situation, they're here every day, they're on the front line, and it carries just a little bit more weight when it comes from somebody like Officer Don Behe.
Don, it's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thanks.
Thank
Don
you.
Behe.
Thank you very much.
Officer Behe, part of the emergency response team.
And how come your uniform is cooler than theirs?
Black uniform? We're the baddest.
The baddest. All right, gotcha.
There you go.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Don.
That's Don Behe. He's maybe the most intense guy we've had on the show today.
And we should point out that we're here at the bleachers overlooking the site of the observance at the Pentagon where the building was repaired. And each and every time we turn on the microphone for a guest, it does sound a bit like a wind tunnel because the wind is still gusting up to 40 miles per hour when we get here.
Now, Mike, I am proud to tell you, we have had today, we've had the DPS guys on, we've had the military guys on. Today we have also D.C. police officers. Bernie Richardson, Paul Hustler, these guys work with the K-9 unit, and they have an unspeakable job. The job, they work with the dogs finding cadavers.
So it's the recovery part of the mission that you guys were involved in. And first of all, I want to thank you guys for coming on the show.
And thank you for doing, obviously, your jobs.
Doing the jobs that I know for many people would be unimaginable. And that had to be, I would imagine, in both of your gentlemen's careers, just about the toughest thing you ever had to deal with.
Yeah, it was. But it was something that we needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
We needed to help the police officers down here and the military people that were in dire need of cadaver dogs. And our operation was more of a solemn operation to have closure for the families.
Let me just explain for the people around the country who are not familiar with the D.C. Metro. There's Washington, D.C., and then there's Virginia and Maryland. And the two states and the city combine to be one metro area.
Then you throw in the Secret Service, you throw in the United States Park Police, you got a tremendous amount of law enforcement.
The CIA, the FBI.
Everybody has to kind of work together.
Yeah, today what we're hearing on the show is we've had MPs, we've had regular Army,
right.
We've had the DSP, we now have Metropolitan Police. All of you guys somehow manage to work together. And you really all came together on the 11th.
Yeah, it was kind of a special working relationship. It just, most of the time, yeah, we bump heads, being from different law enforcement agencies, and everybody has their own directive and they have their own assignments that they want to fulfill. This time, in utter chaos, it all came together as a unit, and people worked in and pitched in and did what they could do to help out.
And what was amazing to me was that as many jurisdictions that were involved over here, everybody came in and just did what they had to do. There was no, hey, this is my jurisdiction, I'm going to handle this. And it was just, everybody just pitched in, and it was a common goal, and everybody got the job done.
Paul, from your perspective, when you arrived on the 11th, what was the situation like, and how did you throw yourself in exactly as you're describing, saying, I'm here to help. I don't care who's got rank over me or who's got jurisdiction. Paul, what did you do when you arrived? What was the situation like on the 11th a year ago?
First of all, for me, is a reality check, because to actually come be called into work and actually drive down Independence Avenue and look across the river and see the Pentagon in flames, it was just, you know, it's like hearing about Oklahoma City. Yes, you hear about it. You don't see it. You see it on the news. But when you actually see it in real life, it takes a whole new perspective. And it's like, whoa, this is really happening. And it's here. It's in our city. And actually, Bernie and I actually started volunteering over here to relieve the guys. We had our mission across the river. They had their mission over here. We'd get done at doing our job. We'd come over here and we'd relieve the guys. And Bernie actually started this and got me involved in it and said, hey, you know, I'm going over there after work. You know, we'd put in 14, 16 hours with the D.C. police, and we'd come over here and relieve the guys over here.
That's the kind of stuff that, the small stuff that is really rarely mentioned, that you don't know, that you get done doing a 15-hour shift.
Yeah, you would work for the D.C. police department, then you would, after that long shift.
That's correct.
That's correct.
You come over here to help out.
So you're working 24 hours.
Well, some of these guys had been on post for 24, 48, 72 hours, and we were coming over here, giving these guys breaks on the outer perimeter post, letting them go home, shower, you know, see their family for a few minutes, and then come on back. And then some of the FBI guys started bringing and suggesting, and let's bring in the cadaver dog teams, because the sadly say the rescue portion of it started to diminish, and it was time to get to work towards a closure on the whole incident. And what we did was we started organizing it for them. They came in, they asked us, do you have cadaver dogs? We assembled between Sergeant Buthy and Officer Legaya, who are part of who actually run dogs, the cadaver dogs. We brought in 30 teams along with veterinarian techs and vets, and we set up a little place down on the north lot. And we were going through the rubble piles doing the job.
Bernie, let me ask you a question. When you're dealing with that aspect of recovery, and you're recovering bodies, which is what a cadaver dog does, and you get done doing your shift, if it's 2 days, if it's 3 days, what gives you, what keeps you going? What keeps you strong in that situation? Seeing the kind of thing that the average citizen will never see. How do you get by it? How do you not go nuts? How do you recharge your batteries? How do you keep yourself together? Obviously, it's probably a valid question for all areas of police work when you see things that are horrible, emergency response workers. But in that particular situation, what gives you personally the strength to keep at it?
You go home, you see your family, you see your kids, and you want them to grow up in the same kind of atmosphere that you grew up in. You want them to have those freedoms that we have in this country. So, and your friends, the other police officers that you work with, the people that you're associated with, and you see so many other teams out here working hard and striving for that one point, for the closure of for the families that have lost people in this tragedy. And at that point, you get so determined that you want to see the final solution. You want to see that everybody is all the families have closure and they can put their loved ones to rest properly.
I think it's also a different form of energy that is amongst us as far as police officers go, where you come to work, you do your job, you go home. But when it's a situation like this, you just go into a different mode. You feed off of one another, and you just don't want to leave. They basically had to tell Bernie and I, look, you need to go home. You've been here entirely too long.
I was going
to
ask you, Don. I get it. A year from now, I'm feeding off the energy of these guys today.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a year after the tragedy. You can't help but be affected.
So what are your feelings, both of you guys, Bernie and Paul, Metro Police, D.C. Police, what are your feelings 1 year ago today? You guys don't work at the Pentagon. You guys aren't here every day, but you were here and you got thrown into the middle of it. Now you're here and you see this beautiful building rebuilt. What are your feelings today?
It's
personal.
It's America at its finest. We are able to overcome anything another country could throw at us, and we came back even 10 times stronger. And the country has proven it by putting this building back together, what they're doing in New York, what they're doing in Pennsylvania. It just is amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
You can't keep America down. You just can't do it.
When we were in New York last year doing our broadcast up there on 9/11, and I hope the same thing has happened down here in D.C., is it more important today to be a police officer than it was a year ago? Do you guys feel that you get more from the public than you got before? And Bernie's laughing at me.
Maybe respect is not the right word to use, but I know what you're talking about, Mike.
Yeah, do you get
more waves?
I know I feel differently about law enforcement. Unless I get a speeding ticket that I feel is categorically unfair. No, just kidding.
It always is.
Of course it is.
And might I say that I think that 81 in a 55
is reasonable speed, right?
If a man is a national treasure on his way to do a radio show, should not be considered reckless driving.
I hope that
absolutely
wasn't today.
All right.
No, it was not today.
Very good.
I'm talking about the ticket 4 months ago.
I understand. But you guys feel like you're in a better space today than you were, believe it or not. Out of this tragedy has come. People respect the people that are our public servants more today than they did a year ago.
Yes.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
I definitely agree.
But I want to know why you were laughing, Bernie, because you were chuckling just a little bit. You still get a lot of crap, don't you?
Absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah.
There's only so far that anything can take you.
Right.
And then somebody steps out of bounds again.
Well, you know, see, that's the difference between, like, the military guys we were talking to. We know their job. Their job is, when the bad stuff happens, you take care of it. Cops, you guys walk a fine line because, on one hand, we want you to protect us. We want you to keep the boogeyman away from us. But on the other hand, when you drive by that speed trap,
leave us alone.
Yeah, I mean, your heart goes way down into your genital area, and you go, oh, God, why me? Why me? Why are they there? But the reason is, of course, you're there not only to catch us speeding, but to save us like these other guys do. And you're our heroes.
But you don't think we feel the same way? I still get nervous when a police car pulls behind me and I'm in my own car going home. I just like, oh, man, is he going to pull me over? Am I going too fast? Am I all right?
Come on, you flash the badge. You're out of there.
I have a story about five of my buddies, five of them, all in one car. Five guys going down. It was a couple of D.C. guys, a park police guy, and I think maybe an Arlington County guy. Right. They're all going down to play golf down in... Yeah, well, they were all going down to Myrtle Beach to play golf. Got pulled over by a rookie state trooper in North Carolina. Five badges in the car. Still gave him the ticket. They always tell that story, too. He wasn't in Arlington County. He was a federal marshal. They said, five badges in the car, so I guess you can probably feel the same way. But the way we feel about you guys, we really do. It's we're getting strength from you guys today, and I hope everybody listening is getting the kind of strength
on behalf of everybody in the metro area, and I mean D.C., Maryland, Virginia. Thank you.
It's been our pleasure.
It has been our pleasure. There's
I don't mean thank you for being on the show. I mean thank you for...
Oh, absolutely.
No, your time on the show is over.
our 5 minutes of fame is up.
Thank you for the job you have done, the job you did on the 11th, and the job you are continuing to do today.
Now, Don, there's one thing that I would like to mention. There were a lot of civilians that came in from Chesapeake.
Chesapeake K-9 and Recovery, Search and Recovery Unit.
They came in and volunteered their time. The veterinarian techs also volunteered their
time. All donated time.
And the vets also. We did take care of a couple dogs that had incidents doing the search and recovery. And we had other officers, Sergeant Jimmy Ginger, Mike Lewis, Mazzotti, and these guys all put forth the effort so that the families would finally get closure and we can move on.
It's an unbelievably difficult